This is episode 408, dated Monday, September 15th, 2025.
You are listening to Sports Roundtable.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Sports Roundtable. I am Bob Branco. This is episode 408, dated Monday, September 15th, 2025. Before we continue, and we have a special guest today, which I will introduce momentarily, but first let me introduce the panel members that we have so far. We start out with Mitch Pomerantz.
Good afternoon, good evening from beautiful downtown Pasadena, where it's 85 and warm, sunny, but they're talking about getting some humidity and some showers later in the week. So enjoying this while we can, but everything is fine and dandy here. It was another good weekend for USC supporters. The Bruins and Notre Dame both lost, and that always makes for a very happy weekend for Trojans.
We are sunny today, a little warmer than it's been, and I think summer is going to make a brief return this weekend into the weekend, from what I understand, here in southern New England. Don Wardlow.
Hi there. We've had about two or three of these hot days in a row here in New Jersey, but listening to the Yankees, listening to some college football, which I rarely do, but it's been an interesting few days.
Peter Algill.
Good afternoon from sunny Coos Bay, Oregon. Have a bit of a cold, but doing well otherwise. And a good weekend for Oregon football. We will see what happens when they start playing some serious football, which is not next week, when they play Oregon State. Oregon State's not good this year, but it is the Civil War next week, so that's a big deal here.
And Reverend Michael Garrett.
And welcome from the great metropolis of Missouri City, Texas, where it's about 91 degrees and partly cloudy, but our humidity is back. But hey, that's normal for us.
You are coming in a little soft.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that, guys. But it just so happens, Mitch, that a Texas team happened to beat Notre Dame for you guys.
Uh-oh. Always appreciated. Always appreciated.
That was a heck of a game, by the way. The only thing I'd say is, could Texas A&M please turn up their volume a little bit? I really had to turn it way up to even hear, even when things were going good for them. And when they had this one guy, Bryce Anderson, badly hurt, and when he got hurt, I mean, you couldn't hardly hear a thing.
Okay, Luther King shall be joining us shortly. I haven't heard that he won't, so when he does, I'm sure that he'll let us know. Let me thank those people who make it possible for Sports Roundtable to be made available. First, we start out with Raymond Gay, our producer and editor, along with our media outlets. Thank you so much for what all of you do. And, of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. Thank you for archiving our shows on my website. To find them, go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down till you get the Sports Roundtable podcast. Click on them, and you will see most of our archives from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I want to say hi to Trish, our facilitator for today's program, along with Brad, our streamer. And because we're being streamed live, let me give out my email address in case somebody wants to send us their thoughts on our show. We always welcome listener comments, because that's what this show is all about. You, the listener. So our email address is bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. And that's all one word, by the way. And without further ado, let me introduce our guest. He's been on the show several times before. Professional broadcaster and author Mike Capps is with us today. Mike, welcome back. We appreciate you being with us always.
Listen to me. It's always a hoot and to be on with you guys and listen to your takes and give you some of mine. And it's, Bob, you know, I've known each other a long time there are a couple of guys there that have known me longer than you have, but it's so much fun to be with you guys.
Now, what team are you broadcasting for?
Well, I have two. I am the broadcaster for University of Texas at San Antonio, and they went all the way to, the Super Regionals. They beat Texas 3 straight games. They beat Texas A&M. A lot of people don't know about the baseball program at the University of Texas at San Antonio. It's on the rise, and they had 6 guys sign professional baseball contracts, 2 drafts, and 4 non-drafted free agents. And then I also do the road games in Texas for the Wichita Wind Surge, who just lost out last night down in Corpus Christi, their chance to go to the playoffs. So I stay busy and
calls middle number are being screened by.
Hello.
Go ahead. I don't know what that interference was. Go ahead, Mike. Continue.
And I'm working now on the third book. And it's called Bats, Balls, and Body Slams. It's about a guy.
6093579.
We are hearing some interference. Can they please mute that?
Yes. Don, you need to mute, please.
We can hear that. I'm sorry about that. Go ahead, Michael. Continue.
No, I'm working on a third book, and it's called Bats, Balls, and Body Slams. It's about, he became my dad after my dad died when I was in high school. And his name is Bill Mercer. He was the original voice of the Texas Rangers, voice of the Cowboys for 10 years, 2 Super Bowls. I mean, I can go on and on about him. The book itself is just, I have to turn in part of it, by Friday. And when the publisher sees it's going to be banging on the door, 400 pages, you're going to be able to check out what happens, because the earth is going to move south, and it'll probably affect the Northeast as well. He's not going to be a happy dude about that, but this is an incredible character. He actually was, a part of local news coverage in Dallas, the Kennedy assassination, and throughout his life after he got out of sports, he MC'd events because he covered the Kennedy assassination at the 6th Floor Museum in Dallas. And he did with me, my time in Round Rock and before that in 2 or 3 independent ball sites. Worked with me in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, worked with me in Tyler, Texas, and worked with me in Round Rock. He did over 350 games with me just because he loved being with me and we love being together, and the whole thing is, it's a fairy tale in some ways. He was in World War II and fought in the Pacific Theater at age 18. Just a man's man. And I do a lot of comparisons of him with the folks that are called Greatest Generation, because he certainly was in the Greatest Generation.
I can't wait to read that, Mike, because I remember Bill Mercer. Yeah.
Michael, I knew you would. I knew you would, and I'm thrilled that you do. And the publisher has distribution rights through Texas A&M Press, and he's allowed to put books in all the Barnes and Nobles in the U.S. and Canada. So it'll be readily available when it's ready. And I'm hoping to have it out before spring training, but as much info as there is about him, I'm having to leave some really good stuff on the floor. And it's breaking my heart, but I think anybody who picks up a copy or listens on, and we'll have a Books on Tape feature here that as well as we did with Grinders, my second book. I'm just thrilled to death to be able to do this. And losing him was a real, real tough, hurdle, but we're there and working on it and hoping to have it out as soon as we can.
And you know, there's one game of his that people can hear on YouTube. At least they can hear the first five innings of it. It's David Clyde's first game with the Texas Rangers, Bill Mercer and Bill Reisenhuber was the other half of that team, at least.
Reisenhuber.
1972.
Thank you, Mike.
1972. He was 18 years old at the time.
Well, okay. I see your baseball and raise you a football. He broadcast the Ice Bowl game December 31st, 1967. And I think you may be able to hear that on YouTube as well, but it may be the best NFL football game I've ever heard broadcast. You remember how cold it was, 20 degrees below zero when they started. Mm-hmm. And he very seldom mentioned the cold. If throughout that three and a half hour broadcast, you didn't have to know it was cold. Bill told you once or twice, and then there was so much slippage. Guys had to come up with different ways and change shoes four or five times. It was a mess. And I don't ever believe we'll see another game like that simply because the fields are better done, and you know, there's a heating component if you have an outside, and they had heating components, except the heat. The heating components all froze up, and it was a mess of a game, but Bill battled through it, and it was really, really, really a great listen. Unfortunately,
all I remember about that game is Leroy Jordan missed the last tackle.
Yes, and Jethro Pugh and Leroy. And interestingly enough, that was the day my dad passed away. The day that, and we talk about that in the book, but my dad and Bill were, as close as brothers, I don't know. I'm just fortunate to have had them both in my life. I'll tell you that.
So what are your thoughts, Mike, on the mediocre NFL? There aren't that many great teams in the NFL right now. A lot of mediocre teams this year. Even Kansas City starting out 0-2, and some are predicting they're going to be a wild card team this year for the first time in a long time.
I watched part of that game yesterday, Bob, and I was astounded at how some of the inept plays that were made. You got to look at it in two ways, though. There is that, but this is a NFL team that's become older. Almost everybody on that roster, they just don't have that many young up and coming players. It's sad, but it's true. And I worry about the NFL. And for this reason, there are so many players that really never had much discipline in college, and they get to the pros and some settle down, some don't, but I almost hate to use this terminology, but if you think we're not in the me generation, especially in professional sports, you're not paying attention. You're not listening closely. I mean, Major League Baseball, NBA, not as much as you might imagine to me. This is my opinion now. And the NFL, I mean, it's all the time. I look up and there's somebody from the Dallas Cowboys in trouble for something, doesn't get enough money for something. Then you have an owner with the Dallas Cowboys who I'll just tell you right now is a putz. And he's going to do it his way because he's the billionaire. And I've heard interviewers on television in Dallas and Fort Worth tell him that they've talked to different owners in the NFL and said, would you hire Jerry Jones as your general manager, and to a person, they all said no. So there's selfishness going on in a lot of different ways. But I think the fact that everybody wants to be the star and not everybody can be the star. And I think, you know, it's, if you started in junior high and you dominated all the way through, an SEC program, let's say, and you were the top dog and you get the NFL and all of a sudden most of those guys are as good as you or better. That's a tough role for a kid to hoe. But the other side of it is at some point you got to grow up or you got to get out of it. That's the take I have. And it's some of these games, Bob, are really hard for me to watch. I mean, it's like offensive coordinators have not been able to get into the brains of the defensive coordinators and back and forth. And it wasn't that way 10, 15 years ago because for some reason these guys were geniuses sat up in those seats in the press box and manipulated the offense and defense. It just has a different, I think you all would agree, it has a different feel to it than it
Mike,
has.
This is Mitch, and I couldn't agree with you more. I was listening this morning briefly to Colin Cowherd, and he had an interesting observation about Caleb Williams. And I am a USC alum. I'm a Trojan. And I was he was talking about Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams not being a good fit. Mm-hmm. Ben Johnson is a structure guy. He wants his quarterbacks to play a certain way. And Caleb, even into his second year, isn't that way, probably never will be. He was certainly that way at USC and drove some of us nuts. The two coaches that, to me, are more old school are Mike Vrabel with Patriots and Dan Campbell Lions. There might be a couple of others, but you're absolutely right. And one of the topics that we've talked about almost every week on this podcast is NIL and the open transfer portal and the guys who are going to come out of college, if it's possible in future, are going to be worse than they are now.
How can they not be? I mean, look. We have the highest paid NIL player playing right 3 miles as a crow flies from my house at the University of Texas. And he struggled out of the gate, the Manning kid. And he comes from a great family, but all we heard from the time UT's season ended last year till the first game this year was Manning. Well, he didn't play that much the first 2 years. I mean, he started one game and came in when, the UT starter was hurt and therein lies part of the tale. Everybody, and you got to understand what the University of Texas is. They all were born with the idea that they should never lose a game in any sport ever. And when you got that kind of attitude and it just radiates and it gets worse, generation by generation, it puts a lot of pressure on a kid. I don't care if he has two uncles that were NFL quarterbacks. He's got a good arm, but I think the arms hurt. Just watching him throw the other day, finally threw one with a little zip on it late in the game. But fortunately for them, they were playing the University of Texas at El Paso and they didn't score many points. They scored 27 against that UTEP defense. And the point is you'd think, as different as those programs are and as rich as the kids are at UT, they'd be maybe putting on a little bit better show than what we saw on television or listened on the radio here in Austin. I mean, I was just flabbergasted. It's the first time I watched the college game in its entirety. And from start to finish, the Longhorns defense came out really strong, but the offense was just, you gotta be kidding me with this. I mean, okay. So you had your starting running back was hurt out of the gate, but look at programs like this. And I think you all would agree, big time programs, you've got to have 2, 3, and 4 running backs that you can run out there and know they're going to give you the same effort that the number one guy did. I mean, and it's that way in big time programs. Then you switch right over and you watch the A&M and, or listen to the A&M and Notre Dame game. Two completely different games. These guys got after it from the get-go. I mean, I was surprised that somebody didn't get killed the way they were hitting each other. But, golly.
Go back to Arch. I believe, and you mentioned his arm may be hurt, but from what I gather, from what I can glean from the first three games, he seems to have regressed instead of progressed.
Yes.
He's not getting any better. He's throwing the balls, he's short-arming the balls, he's throwing sidearm, he's not really hitting, he's missing open receivers.
Well, and to prove your point, the last 10 passes he threw in the first half, he did not complete.
Exactly.
I mean, are you kidding me? But see, Michael, this is where it went. I never saw him drop down to the side much. Quint Ewers did that last year, the Longhorns quarterback. But this is a kid who's his firepower is from up top, not sidearm. And I was just stunned at what I saw, and regress is a great, great word. Using that word, Michael, that's awesome, because that's exactly what it looks like.
What are your thoughts, Mike, on North Carolina? As a New England Patriots fan, I'm trying to follow Bill Belichick's post-Patriots environment, and of course he's under a little bit of scrutiny for non-football related issues. That's all I'll say right now, you know, because he's dating somebody 50 years younger than him. But that's a subject for another type of program, not ours.
Well, I could go on and on about that. I could give you about 14 minutes of that, but
do you think, my question is, do you think there'll be a generation gap between his coaching style and the kids he's trying to coach?
How can it not be?
Exactly.
I mean, I only saw part of, I guess, the first game they played this year. And by the end of the first half, I'm switching it over to, you know, South Alabama against, Florida A&I or something. I mean, just to get away from it. Look, first of all, he's my age. And actually I'm a little bit older than him, but I relate to young people a lot better than he does, because, you know, he was the NFL coach for so long, and you drop back to college and you have a 24-year-old female quote unquote companion alongside, you got more help or hurt working with you than God should have given anybody. But I mean, I'm just shaking my head about it. I don't know how in the world those kids put up with this, because the attention is all on the coach, all on the young woman. And hey, you know, we're the players. Help us out a little bit. When North Carolina announced that he was going to get hired as a head football coach, I thought to myself, you gotta be kidding me. He's what, 2, 3 generations ahead of them now, at least, right?
He's about 74, right?
Yep. And I'll be 75 in December. And
realistically, I wish him the best of luck with Jordan. Yeah. That's her name. I hope they have a great life together. I'm just talking about the scrutiny that this kind of thing causes.
Why would it not? I mean, look, you got to say, to me, Bob, I judge it by results. Now, if that team suddenly gets hot and runs the table and is running up scores and doing this and that and the other, and they get in a big bowl game, next thing you know, they're in the tournament, which I don't think they'll be in that tournament. Then we've got some proof that he's able to do this. I just don't think, well, how many millions of dollars did he make as an NFL coach? And what does he have to prove coming back to college? I just do not understand that.
But do you think that North Carolina, the administration or the athletic director thought that name recognition would bring in the best players in the country? He could have his pick. I want to play for Bill Belichick.
Okay. All right. Let's see. He's 74 and the oldest one of these guys, probably 23, right? So you're talking about 51 years of difference in their ages. And Belichick, look, I understand that part of it, Michael. And I can sort of agree with you, but I mean, if you're being realistic about it, you got to think, how in the world do we compete when all the attention's on the coach and not on the players? I mean, this and just for sake of discussion, the University of Texas at El Paso has a 35-year-old coach. He's 8-10 years older than his players. But I want you to know that guy was on the sideline and he never stopped moving, and those kids bought in to his passion and fire. You don't see any passion and fire from Bill Belichick on the sideline at North Carolina. You just don't.
Now, or even in press conferences. When has he shown passion in press conferences?
Well, you see, we're all making the case, and I think we're right. Now, I'd be willing to bet you, I don't know what is his deal for, 3 years?
I don't remember the extent of his contract.
Well, if it's 3 years, 2 years, 1 year, I'd be willing to bet you somebody's going to want to buy him out of that thing before it's over.
But let me expand on the topic, because there's another aspect to this. We were just talking about the young players coming out of college and going into the NFL. How do you think these young players, particularly the ones who have been treated like royalty from junior high on, how do you think a lot of them feel about playing for a coach who takes all the air out of the room, who's in the spotlight? And I'm thinking of Deion Sanders, who's not in his 70s, is in his what, late 40s, mid 40s? No, how do you think some of these guys feel about playing for a coach who get all the publicity?
It's you're looking at trouble, period, in any one of a number of ways. Deion at least disciplines guys, and he does it he does it two ways. I've noticed one is very quietly taking the guy's side, and the other is saying in the middle of a news conference, we're not putting up with that. So he's coming at you both ways. But for a kid coming into North Carolina and seeing that about halfway through this coming season, the season we're in, I think you'll see a bunch of people jump into the portal and get the heck out of there. That's what I think is going to happen. I don't see this working out. I mean, I'm like I told you, I'm going to be 75 in December, and I hate to be trying to do that with these
then
kids.
What do you suppose the motivation was for North Carolina hiring Bill in the first place?
You're asking me?
Well, I mean, I think we're all asking ourselves, because
yeah.
I mean, it was almost inevitable that there would be this major generation gap between the kids and him. Plus the way he coaches, he's old school. You don't see much of the way he coaches anymore in college or in the NFL.
No, you don't. And these kids want high powered offenses. run it 30% of the time, throw it 70% of the time. And it just doesn't translate. And but you're making the case. You've just made the case, Bob. I mean, it's like, what are we all doing here? God almighty.
But Bob, and I'm 75, but I'll admit my bias. He's still my favorite coach. Pete Carroll at 74, 75 could coach a college team. What I heard is that he really fits in with younger people. I don't know if he still does, but up until a year or two ago, he was a surfer. He really doesn't act like a staid, stodgy old guy who sits on the sidelines and glares at his players. I think, and maybe Pete Carroll's the exception to the rule, but everything I've heard is they really like him in Vegas, and he could still coach a college team, I think.
Well, but
is his coaching style different from Belichick's?
Oh, I believe absolutely.
That's why. Absolutely. That's why. Yeah. I think it's the style more than the generations. Maybe if he got modern, it wouldn't matter how old he is.
Yeah.
That's right.
And he is.
100% correct. Yep. Yep.
We have a coach at UT, Dwayne Aquino, who's in his 60s. And Dwayne has been around for years coaching defensive backs. And if you watch our defensive backfield now, he has had a tremendous mark on the way those guys play. And so, but he's been around. He still communicates with them. So it's a personality difference, I believe.
You're right.
I think Belichick is just, you know, his personality is just, you know, he's a, I don't know, strange personality as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. Well, and think about this. I mean, if you're 18, 19, 21, 22 years old and you're looking at your coach, and I'm taking this back and you can stop me if you want, but here we go. And you're quote unquote with a 24 year old. I'm having serious problems with that. If I'm 22, 21, 20 years old, I just think it's nuts, but, that's what they're saddled with. And I don't know. There's just too much publicity for her. And I'm sorry I'm back on that track, but
that's okay. As I said, I wish them the best. The age should not matter in a relationship, but, and it doesn't as long as she's over 18. But we know how publicity is, the media is, and it gets attention whether it's fair or not.
Absolutely. Especially, yeah. I mean, she's, allowed that to happen too. And she, you know, back in the early summer, gee whiz, all you saw on TV, somebody would say Bill Belichick, and here's a picture of this woman. I'm going, what? This makes me crazy.
I don't know. Switching to baseball, I have a couple of baseball questions for you.
I have one for him too, Bob.
What was that, Michael?
I have one for him too.
I'm going to let you ask yours first. Go ahead, Michael.
Over the weekend, Mike, we had the longest home run of the year hit. What do you think of this kid, Kirk?
I'm going to reserve judgment until he's had 100 at bats. No, wait. There's science behind this. I was raised by you. Some of you may know the name. Some of you may not. I was raised by, a scout named Red Murph, a scout named Billy Capps, my cousin, and two or three other veteran scouts, and, Buzzy Keller, who was one of the founders of the Kansas City Royals, academy they had. And all these guys preached a mantra of baseball makes a mistake when it does not allow a starting pitcher 7 straight starts when he comes up because you can't get a read on who he really is in the big leagues. They also said you have to give a kid if you bring up a kid that you're serious about, you must give him 150 to 200 at bats to figure out who he really is as a professional hitter. And this is why I don't jump on the bandwagon, Michael, while I appreciate their power, I appreciate what they're doing. Big league pitchers are tough for young kids to deal with. And where he goes from there, I mean, he may hit 80 home runs some year. I don't know. But right now, I guess it sounds old school, but I want to see at least 100 at bats.
Reverend Michael, who's the player you're referring to?
He means Nick Kurtz from the A's.
They're thinking he's rookie of the year. He's had more than 100 at bats. He's got almost 30 home runs.
Okay.
It wouldn't hurt.
Something else. I'm sorry.
It wouldn't hurt if he played in a real ballpark. You know, he plays in this minor league place in Sacramento, and he's going to for the next 2 years. So it'll be several years before he plays in a real ballpark, and then we can make a real judgment.
Michael, I'm sorry about that. I was thinking about another kid that I saw hit a bomb over the weekend.
Nick Kurtz might be rookie of the year at this point.
Well, and you know what? Thank you for jumping on because yeah, you're right.
He hit a 493-foot home run, which to me says he's got a.
Yes. Yes.
Now you're fading out.
I have a question, but go ahead, Bob. I have a question about a minor leaguer that you can probably tell me about.
I'll be brief. I just wanted to make a comment about. I talked about parity in football. There's a lot of parity in the American League of Baseball. I think right now there are only 3 teams that we can fear in the entire sport: the Phillies, the Brewers, and the Padres. Everybody else right now. You're either good or you're fair, or in the case of the Rockies and White Sox, you're awful.
Yeah.
They're awful, I mean. But, you know what I mean. So that's all I was going to say about that. Now, unless you want to respond, Mike, I'll defer to Mitch.
No, go ahead, Mitch, and then I'll come
well,
right
in. Well, I was going to say the Padres are beginning to hit like the Dodgers have, so I'm not sure they go into that same category. But I wanted to ask you about a guy with the Dodgers Double A club that a couple of years ago they thought was going to be tremendous. And I, once in a while, I'll listen to a Double A Tulsa game, but I haven't done so recently. What is your take on Jose Ramos?
Well, everybody and I didn't get to see him because he doesn't play in Texas. I would have seen him, had I done some games for Wichita in Tulsa.
Right. Okay.
Everything that I hear is extremely positive about him. Great clubhouse kid, lots of pop, and a guy who's going to be there at some point. And you know what? Double A's, I think we all agree, is a jumping off point where you prove it and you get to move up to Triple A or you don't. And that's a good testing ground, and Texas League's pretty tough. And so I'm anxious to see him grow up.
They brought him up recently to Triple A, but I haven't really listened to Alex Friedman for a couple of 3 weeks to see how Ramos is doing up there. But he reminds me a lot of Andy Pajas, who's my favorite Dodger. Mm-hmm. Is doing really well for us, except when he makes dumb plays in the outfield, which he does once in a while. But Jose Ramos sounds like he's kind of following in Pajas' footsteps. So maybe they'll be playing side by side in a year or two.
Well, there's that possibility, and I may just turn Alex Friedman. Well, they're not playing tonight, but they'll be.
Yeah.
But well, this is their last week. That's a great point. And I've seen information about him, through my guys in Wichita, because they're in the same division. They're in the Texas League North. Wichita is, as is,
Tulsa.
Tulsa. And, they've seen him. The guys in Wichita have seen him. They really, really like him. One of the twins coaches there in Wichita said, boy, wish we had him.
So I would like to bring our participants in on the show. We do have people who may want to raise their hands and ask Mike Capps a question. This is Sports Roundtable, and our guest is Mike Capps, professional radio broadcaster and author. So, Trish, does anybody have their hand raised at this time?
We have no hands at this time.
All right. When they do, just let us know, and we'll take their question. Thank you.
I will.
Mike, that's heartbreaking. Mike, can you let's continue the baseball talk. We have 2 weeks left in the season, I think, and I have sort of two reactions. One, there's some really interesting races happening, about who's going to make it to playoffs and who isn't in the, National League. Me being a Mets fan, I'm disgusted with the way the Mets are playing and hope they don't make it just because I don't want to see them get humiliated on a national stage. I'm sort of curious to know what you think is going to happen in right for the rest of the season in the playoffs. And also I am sort of stunned by the, and I talk about this all the time. If you listen to a sort of average national sports talk, baseball doesn't exist anymore. Exactly. And I know it's, we talk about this on our show that baseball is a regional sport, but I'm sort of astounded that the national sports talk folks are paying no attention to baseball. I'm an old guy too. And I remember, you know, when baseball ruled the universe back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And now it's sort of fallen off the stage, as it were. Just general reactions to what I asked about.
Well, ESPN and the other networks, Fox and all these guys who do sports talk, they could care less about baseball. The only way I hear any good baseball talk is I have SiriusXM satellite radio and I listen to that MLB channel.
Yeah.
And that's the clearest, most concise. But you'll remember ESPN forever had a baseball show on at like 6:30 at night Eastern and had a bunch of great guests and all that. Over the years, you just saw or heard fewer guests. And next thing you know, ESPN's not going to have Major League Baseball next year and yada, yada. And you could see it coming when that show started to deteriorate. It's stupid because there is so much baseball available now on television and radio. And for big organizations Fox will take the games, but you just don't hear any talk about it. The major league broadcasts on MLB radio are really, really good to a certain extent, but there are a few pieces lacking in my mind. The other side of it is they're there every day, all through the season, all through the off season, and you can just tune that in about three different times in a day and you can figure out what's going on in baseball. And I just think the ESPNs of the world and the Foxes of the world are just sort of abandoning ship when the last time I checked, attendance was still great in the big leagues. Yep. There's still great races. I mean, the Dodgers and the Padres, I mean, come on, they're going to duke it out the rest of the way. Milwaukee's, I just don't see the Cubs having enough firepower to compete with Milwaukee. And Milwaukee can do so many different things to win a ball game. And I mean, nobody steals bases anymore except Milwaukee.
How about the Astros, Rangers, and Mariners? That's going to come down to the last day, I think. Those three teams.
I'm getting tired of watching that. This sort of mediocrity on fire is what that is. But, and plus, I just lost faith in Framber Valdez over the last month. And then he pulls the stunt with a rookie catcher and I'm gone. I'm done. The thing that has amazed me, is the injury, list that the Rangers have had and they're three games back.
I know.
You know, West and they're
no Seager. No Seager, no Simeon, no Garcia.
Nope. Garcia came back over the weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, but here again, and we want to talk about older guys. Bochy's 2 years younger than me, and he owns that clubhouse in Arlington.
Isn't he the oldest manager in the sport?
Yes.
Yeah.
But you know what? He also knows how they played a tape of him the other night, not before last, on TV about it was Boch walking in and talking to the guys. They won a homestand and he's talking to them and how much he appreciated them. And you could, and when our guys got hurt, you could have just called in the dogs, put out the fire and been done with it. But you battled. They've used some kids, that they never thought would darken the door of AAA, let alone the big leagues this year. And you know what? That's a lot on the manager and the coaches in my mind, because they know who's who. They've seen success and they say, see, we told you in spring training, you can do this, and I'll be damned if you didn't do it.
So getting back to the main question, why do you think baseball's being abandoned by networks who shouldn't abandon it?
This is a quick answer. Stupidity. I just think, I think they think, and I would be willing to bet you that some surveys they've done, some of the people that they talk to that are football and basketball fans would say, it's just too slow for me. Well, no, it's not. If you pay attention to it, they've got rules to speed the game up and it works. And it works because most of these guys who piddled around forever and ever between pitches, were allowed to do that. And it's not that way anymore. I just think it's slowness of the game that's one of the excuses they would use. And, they all ought to be hanging their heads, all those sports, with all the gambling money they're taking in. Cause that's a story for another day, but it affects what's going on still and all. I just think it's stupidity on the part of these networks. And I'm telling you, having worked for two different networks, there's a lot of stupidity going on.
Mike, along those lines, I think gambling has a lot to do with it. Everybody gambles on football. I'm in a fantasy football league. I don't want to play fantasy baseball, but I've been playing fantasy football for 40 years. And you know, because baseball play games are every day, I don't think there's as much gambling as there is in football, because there are only 17 games a year in the pros and 13 or 14 in college. I'd be interested to know. Maybe we ought to have a bookmaker on sometime, Bob, but I'd love to know, comparatively speaking, how much money is gambled on football as opposed to baseball. I bet you more people gamble on football than baseball.
Peter, have you been watching some of the baseball shows? Every major league team now, and MLB radio does the same thing. They give the odds on every game.
They do. I'll vouch for that.
And that drives me nuts. And I may have said this in this forum, maybe not. If you're a young man and you haven't had much in your life, you may be from the Dominican, you may be from Venezuela, Puerto Rico, whatever, some lower echelons in the U.S. and you come up to the big leagues, you're 22, 23 years old, you've had nothing. And maybe you had a couple of good starts and you're walking out onto the field and the guy in a black suit comes up and says, I got $3 million in my pocket in cash. Tomorrow night you get a start. You want to play with me? The kid's going to take the money. The kid's going to take the money. And forever on the walls of clubhouses that I've gone in to interview major league players and minor league players, this big list of rules about gambling, you just don't do it. And now this commissioner has turned it over, and guess who the gamblers are? mob guys.
That's Isn't there a network now on the radio? I think it's on the AM dial. I forgot what number. Called the betting network. You bet and you bet or something like that.
There's a
Bet network.
There's the You Bet, and then there's VSiN. Cause remember, hi guys, VSiN came on the scene when Brent Musburger left the broadcast booth.
Yeah.
He created that network. So yeah, betting is everywhere.
Yeah. You know what? There is a feature on the Yankee pregame where it's not the regular announcer. It's the pre and post game guy,
Emmanuel Bavari. Yes.
And he talks about the betting and believe me, my stomach turns every time I hear that. If I make a recording of it, I cut it out of the recording. Cause that just, it was always the great thou shalt not. There was commandment numero uno when I was in baseball until I left and beyond. Yep. And now they're in bed with these.
Well, that
people who I can't say what they are on the radio.
Don, the thing is, that's now every sport. That's not just baseball.
Yep.
It's NFL, NHL, NBA, all the big sports that we enjoy. Guess what's going to be a part of it? Sports betting, gambling.
I know. And can I talk about something good about baseball?
Yes, go ahead.
Because there's a team I'm going to name, and you're never going to believe you heard this from a Jersey boy, the Seattle Mariners.
First place in the AL.
This is one heck of a good team, and they got a guy.
Yeah.
The big dunker, Caleb John Raleigh, Cal Raleigh.
54. Man.
That 53 is, home runs.
53 and
54 now.
54. He got his 54th, I think, yesterday,
with Mantle for switching.
Yep.
Amazing.
But gentlemen, on Sunday mornings on Fox, and it's only during football season, you can listen to Bill Krakenberger, who is a professional gambler.
Oh,
he's on our 570 Fox outlet here. From 8 to 10 or 7 to 10 in the morning before the games come on. And he talks about sports gambling. And yesterday he I think it's weekly. He has a guy from one of the big casinos. So, you know, you can't get away from it, but it's certainly part of football.
So let me go back to baseball for a second.
Yeah. We have about 3 or 4 more minutes. Go ahead, Peter.
Does the contract run out at the end of this season, the baseball contract, or is it the following year?
26.
I think 26. It's the next year.
So
yeah.
One more year of sanity. And then after that, I think all bets are off. I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
I mean, maybe they'll get smart and settle, come to an agreement. But I think there are people on both sides who are like, you know, solidly wedged to their position about, you know, salary cap and all of that. Do you have any sense of what might happen with that? I know it's a long time away. But I worry about that for baseball.
I am right in your wheelhouse with that. Having talked to some players and some front office people, they see thunderclouds ahead, and that's just the best way to put it. You got rich people on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
You've got gamblers pulling and tugging in one direction. You've got players pulling and tugging in one, owners pulling and tugging in one. I could see half a season lost.
Cabrera, here's a question for you though. At what point do we get somebody to say, hey, we need a mediator in here to where everybody sits in a room, the door's locked until a deal is hammered out?
See, there you go thinking again.
That's the old school method.
Well, the problem is that both sides need to agree on a mediator. That's the way mediation works.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
And neither side wants it right now, as far as I can tell.
Well, at some point, somebody has to be the adult in the room and say, hey, people, don't we need to come up with something so it's a win for everybody so we don't have to do what we did in 1994 and then waiting to half the season in 95?
Luther, let me throw this at you. You got rich owners, right the backs of rich players.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
So you go, I work from that premise.
Mm-hmm.
So, see, I wish I could be optimistic about it.
So do I.
But,
gentlemen, baseball is a kid's game. You expect kids to act like adults?
Hold on though, Mitch. I'm glad you brought this up though. Cause keep in mind,
2 minutes.
But when you have kids become adults, right? And then you throw a pile of money on top of that, they're only going to get worse. And I think what we're seeing is the worst of what it should be.
I'll tell you before we go, the thing that worries me the most for baseball fans is if there is a strike or a work stoppage or whatever you want to call it, I don't think the fans are going to care. I think a lot of fans will just say, screw them and not pay attention at all. And when the sport comes back, cause it will eventually, I think they have a really hard time, getting the fan base back.
You know what that's called?
Peter, we have the example of what happened after the strike in, what was it, 94?
The season canceled in 94.
They came back when Maguire and Sosa went crazy.
Yeah, but they came back. There are different times, Mitch.
But here's what that's called, though. You may be right, Mitch. I hope you're right, but I'm not convinced at all.
But Peter, what you're talking about is apathy. Because when fans start not caring, And your sport begins to suffer because you're not getting what you normally get at the turnstile, and fans start having apathy for the players and the teams because none of these players are going to have a bake sale to eat to make ends meet. They've got money for life.
We are out of time. I'm sorry to be abrupt, but we are out of time. It was a fascinating program. Gentlemen, you did a great job. Including you, Capper. Great job as our guest. Thanks, we appreciate Capper. It. We'd like to have you back at some point.
You know, all you got to do is call.
We will. We'll definitely keep in touch on that. Trish, thank you. Brad, everybody else, go safe with God's abundant blessings. Have a great week, everybody.